From the Land of Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market reported as the 7th day of October 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. A bit later in the program, Eric Snodgrass will be here from Agrible to take a look at the weather forecast. Along the way, we'll check the agricultural news for the afternoon, and we'll bring you the whole of our Commodity Week program recorded yesterday afternoon, posted to the website already at willag.org, with our panelists including Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities, Bill Mayer from Strategic Farm Marketing, and Dan Zwicker of Zwicker Consulting. And it all happens on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here are the numbers as they finished up in Chicago for this Friday afternoon. December corn down 3/4 at 339 3/4. The March at 349 1/2, 3/4 lower. July down a penny and a quarter, 363 1/4. Soy complex now. November beans at 956 3/4, down 1 3/4. January a penny and 3/4 lower at 963. The March down 2 1/4 at 968 3/4. Bean oil a penny higher. Bean meal down $2.90. December soft red winter wheat a penny lower at 394 3/4, July at 440 1/2, down 2 1/4. Surprisingly, July hard red at 440 1/2 as well, also down 2 1/4. Live cattle futures finished the lead down 60 at $101.82 1/2. October feeders at 127.55, 27 1/2 lower, and lean hogs for the day up 25 cents at $50.62 1/2. We're joined now by Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas, to explore these markets. Thanks for being with us, Mike.
Good afternoon, Todd. How is your week this week?
It's been a really good week. It's been clear here. A lot of work being done for the most part across the Eastern Corn Belt. I was out on the farm earlier in the week with some friends and rode the combines with my brothers, and it's just been a fantastic week. In fact, I was on the South Farms yesterday morning checking out some new technology producers might use to control some herbicide-resistant weeds. If you want to see more about that, you can learn about it on the website. How about for you?
Slower, much slower. In fact, I was supposed to ride in some combines myself this week, but we were seeing quite a few storms move through, and it just chopped up the week quite a bit, and seemed like guys were having to change around quite a bit. Where they were going to run and what they were going to run. So I think we slowed down quite a bit, but I will say that we also had gotten a pretty good foothold established in the past couple weeks, and we're running nicely above, you know, the five-year average in the state of Kansas. And I would say this part of eastern Kansas especially has made some good headway.
Looking ahead for the forecast, I know because I've already talked to Eric, and so you'll hear this in just a minute, but it looks like it should be wide open for maybe the rest of the month for producers to get a crop going. What's that going to do to the price of corn and soybeans, and how much pressure comes into the marketplace?
Well, I think it was one of three big factors and features as to why we couldn't see follow through. You know, if you would have looked and taken a snapshot at the market on Wednesday, Todd, you would have seen a lot of good price action, a lot of good technical price action, and a lot of strong fundamentals pushing prices higher. I was surprised especially to see that wheat actually closed down over 1% after making a new weekly high on Wednesday. This also pushed back into the corn, where corn only closed up about 0.9% after hitting a new 10-week high on Wednesday, and beans only up about 2 cents in the November contract after testing 4-month trend line resistance on a weekly chart and monthly chart. And I think this is because of, in part, the weather opening up for U.S. harvest. The currency markets were very schizophrenic with the hard Brexit decision and the British pound being sold aggressively the last two sessions. And then obviously the USDA report, we got the pre-estimates coming out, and they were as big as I had expected them to be on the private side. Bigger harvested acres in both corn and beans, bigger yield in beans, maybe a little bit less yield in the corn, but still up there at the, you know, 2.35 billion on corn for ending stocks, and up over 400 million for an average trade guess in the beans. So these three factors, U.S. harvest, weather being one of them, I think really pulled back the horns of the bulls.
And do you think there's an opportunity coming yet in the corn and the soybean market? And if so, how soon might that come? As some producers will certainly be looking to make sales across the scale.
I'd still say we're on track for that 2014 style price action. That model year, analog year of 2014 is intact, Todd, especially given the demand side of the market. I think that's been the unsung hero of this market so far, is ethanol demand, crude oil demand, corn demand, soybean demand, and now even wheat demand with some really strong exports sold to Morocco this past week. Yeah, I think we're still in a 2014 model as long as the U.S. dollar doesn't start going sharply higher and hurt our export environment. And obviously, I wouldn't want to see USDA do much to the numbers on Wednesday. If we don't see either of those two things occur, I think higher into mid-November would make sense, like we did in 2014.
You did mention Brexit there for just a second. I saw something that referred to it as a flash crash, and I think that was in the sterling. Can you talk to me a bit about that and what really it means, if anything at all?
It means a lot because it shows the domino effect and the integrated markets we have. We had a 6% move down in the sterling. You're 100% right. And that 6% market move happened in 2 minutes. To give you an idea, of the power of the algo traders and the high frequency traders, especially, and to be able to do that, the month of June, when we had the Brexit decision, we moved that much, and we moved that much now in the month of October. If you take those 2 months of movement out, though, Todd, we didn't move that much in the whole year of 2015. So to move 6% in 2 minutes meant we essentially moved the total sterling market, the whole move of all of 2015 as far as its range. And so when you see this kind of thing happen and you see the fact that the sterling is down to its lowest level since 1985 against the U.S. dollar, that's going to create a domino effect with the stronger dollar, weaker crude oil, and then that's going to power over into the grains and the livestock as well. And you just can't get around it, in my opinion, in these integrated markets now. And computerized trading, they are the market maker now, and they have an unbelievable size that they can wield as a market maker. And so I think this is something we really have to delve more into, and it's going to be a big focus. Artificial intelligence is going to be talked a lot about during my winter seminars this winter.
So this is something that moves the market arbitrarily in some cases. Does the market rebound from these types of moves? And so what I'm thinking is generally the market will, especially for commodities, come back to a cash. It should come back to a cash-centered marketplace at some point. But is there so much cash from the outside markets that these could unhook? Is that your fear?
I think it would be healthy in the long term if they would unhook. I mean, when you think about George Soros breaking the British pound market and the euro market early on in his career that made his name famous, you just don't recreate wealth that quickly, in my opinion. And so I think it's easier to destroy wealth, and to lose that 6%, I think, is a lot harder to regain it back. That would be my first. Broad brush opinion on the subject. I think the algo traders, algo trader could be as simple as someone that's just using a moving average or moving using a stochastic, but they're doing it with all computer trade models and they're not touching it with human fingers at all. It could be that simple, or it could be as complex as taking the planted acres and the yield and the production numbers and the USDA report estimates from the news wires and plugging that into a more sophisticated model. But when you have that kind of power and you can move the market that much, I think you do have what I would describe as wealth destruction that happens more easily than wealth creation.
Yeah, and so the power comes in part because the algorithms are controlling such large amounts of money in funds.
That's exactly right. It's funny we're talking about this. I actually had a guest here today from the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, and we had lunch, and she and I were talking about exactly this, and she said there's actually times when the algo traders see what's going on in the markets, and it because it goes outside of their parameters, there's actually some algo traders that move out of the markets, liquidity dries up, and then that makes the price extremes, the difference between the bids and offers, even worse. So it's just the size and the scope. It's like being a day trader on steroids, I think is how I would best describe it. And for the producer out there listening, we never wanted to fight the day trader when we were doing our marketing plan. And I think this is just a bigger, more powerful type day trader in action. We do not want to mess with the short term. We really want to plan out our marketing plan that goes out 6, 9, 12 months. That's how we create profit for our farms, if you ask me.
All right. Anything else to add before I let you go for the afternoon?
I would say watch the weather models. The European weather model is not as dry as the American. And, you know, we've been around long enough with these weather models. After a major hurricane stirs up the computerized models, we might introduce some more rain. So I'd say midweek next week, right around the report, we might have to take a second look at some of these weather models here in the United States. And I'd also say Mato Grosso did not get the rains they were supposed to get, and now it's turning off drier on the weather model. So that might be a feature after the numbers come out.
Mike Zuzulo, thanks so much.
You bet, sir. Have a great week.
Mike Zuzulo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He's out of Atchison, Kansas. Joins us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. In today's agricultural news, we'll start with a story you may recall. A businessman from China will now serve 3 years in prison after being caught rummaging through Iowa cornfields to learn trade secrets from U.S. seed corn companies. The Des Moines Register reports the man known as Robert Moe was taking seed from the Midwest and shipping it to China. He was found by DuPont Pioneer security guards in 2011 digging in a cornfield where test plots of new seed corn varieties were growing. He was arrested in 2013, but five other co-workers fled the U.S. before they could be arrested. Prosecutors say he traveled the Midwest working for Kingsnauer Seed, a subsidiary of a technology conglomerate in China, to take corn seed and ship it to China so scientists could attempt to reproduce its genetic traits. He pled guilty in January and was sentenced to 3 years in prison this week. Well, this weekend there is a presidential debate, and the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, may be up on the list of questions to talk about. The campaign rhetoric, of course, about trade deals comes pretty cheap, but the price to pay for walking away from those deals would be much costlier. It's certainly possible to pull out of NAFTA. That's an easy 6-month notice by the president with no congressional approval. The U.S. is out, one out of the World Trade Organization, or the WTO. A U.S. president can simply do that, too. The recent Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, that's as simple as the next president walking away from the deal. But vote-getting campaign rhetoric is cheap, and the tougher part is paying the price after the fact, says the American Farm Bureau Federation trade advisor Dave Samuelson.
I mean, you can say you're not going to abide by the trade agreement, usually which means then you want to put on some kind of protection against their exports to us. Well, then other countries would be free, especially if they feel they're not bound by pre-existing agreements, to put on barriers to U.S. exports.
He says oftentimes those barriers are so prohibitive that they shut out U.S. goods, especially farm goods. Former Ag Department trade advisor in the Clinton years, Paul Drazik, says based on an earlier study of pulling out of NAFTA, such action would be devastating.
You look at the rundown of crops and products that would be harmed and harmed substantially in terms of lower prices to farmers. It's wheat and corn, soybeans, rice, dairy, pork, beef, poultry, dried beans.
Drazik says such a move would mean much higher tariffs on U.S. agricultural products and dramatic reductions in agricultural exports, when just the opposite is what's needed. And finally today, we'll come back here to the Midwest, but look a little further across the Pacific Ocean at the same time. Bex Hybrids has purchased the former BASF seed research facility built in the Hawaiian Islands in 2012. Director of Research at Bex, Dr. Kevin Cavanaugh, says the move of most of the winter research facilities to Hawaii is part of their stepped-up corn breeding program.
In order to do that these days, to use the most modern plant breeding techniques, you certainly use the summertime here to do a lot of research, but one very important piece is to be able to continue that research and continue advancement of generations of breeding material into the winter season. We have the opportunity to do that now on Hawaii, so that means we'll have better control. We'll be able to move things faster. On Hawaii, we can do 3 generations a year, so we can, for projects that are high-value projects, we can turn those 3 cycles in 1 year, so that speeds up the process. And at the end of the day, that means we'll have more genetic gain and higher-performing hybrids to offer farmers.
Bex assumes the land leases on about 1,000 acres of land, and they'll own a 13,000-square-foot, well-equipped facility. Winter research is focused heavily until now in Chile and Mexico for Bex, and there has been additional work done in Argentina and Puerto Rico. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Friday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, joined now by Eric Snodgrass. He's at Agribull. Good afternoon to you, Eric.
Good afternoon.
Tell me a little bit about harvest conditions over the last 2 weeks. We really are just getting rolling.
Yeah, you know, it's been interesting. Over the last 2 weeks, some locations have had extremely favorable weather conditions, like Illinois for the most part. But remember we had that cutoff low last week? Well, that really impacted Indiana and Ohio's, their harvest progress. And then a couple of weeks ago, they had that torrential rainfall event that happened in northern Iowa and southern Minnesota, but they've recovered. Recently, there's just been some shower and thunderstorm activity for the last few days, kind of stretching up the middle part of the country. So think Oklahoma, Kansas, parts of Missouri, Nebraska, parts of Minnesota, and a big chunk of Iowa. But honestly, overall, the progress has been pretty good. Now, there are some marginal regions, though, that you have to think about, and that is the Dakotas and in Montana. They've been extremely wet over the last month. But if we kind of just summarize all of it, things have not been too bad for this year's, progress for harvest.
What do we see in the next few days?
Yeah, so there's a pretty good cold front that's coming through the Midwest right now. We had some frost and freeze advisories through the heart of the Great Plains there last night, and that cooler weather is coming our way. In fact, we're expecting that front to pass through Champaign here in a little while. And that's going to drop our temperatures off tonight into the 40s. So it might be a good night to have a fire in the fireplace or a good bonfire outside. But what follows this is going to be fantastic. We're going to see highs in the 60s tomorrow. Might be a little windy during the day, but honestly, as we get into the start of next week, we're talking 70s for highs. And I'm not seeing much in the way of precipitation for the next 5 to 7 days. So that's looking to be pretty good harvest weather. So I'm expecting things to really ramp up over the next 5 to 7 days. Getting into the end of October, the third and fourth week, there's a little bit of confusion in the long-range forecasts over what we're expecting in terms of temperatures. I'm not sold yet on the really, really warm conditions that some of the models are forecasting, but we got to keep a really close eye on that as we move out, because we really haven't had our first big frost yet so far across Illinois, Indiana, Missouri, and Iowa, so we got to be on the lookout for when that happens.
What's your view of the havoc created by Matthew?
Yeah, Matthew has been a very powerful and impactful storm. I've read some reports of several 100,000 without power along the Florida coast. Matthew did graze just 8 to 10 miles off the coast last night, so technically hasn't made a direct landfall yet, although the impacts have still been pretty impressive. Seen a lot of images of the storm surge, a lot of images of some pretty nasty wind damage. So Matthew right now, Cat 3, moving its way toward basically Jacksonville, Florida, will probably make an impact somewhere, a landfall there between Jacksonville, Savannah, Georgia, Charleston, South Carolina, in that region. And what this is really going to impact in terms of ag is the peanut and cotton harvest in those states. So think Southern Georgia, South and North Carolina. And then what's really amazing is that the steering winds in the mid-levels of the atmosphere are going to take the circulation of Matthew and turn it back south after it finishes kind of dumping a lot of rain in North Carolina. And it's going to weaken, but it is going to bring that same circulation back across Florida again over the next 7 days. So Matthew has really been an impactful storm so far this year, and we're not done with him yet. He is going to make this kind of loop-the-loop pattern and head back toward Florida next week.
I'm going to turn your attention to Brazil for me as we wrap up our time together.
Sure. So, speaking of Brazil, we got to look at what the current La Nina situation looks like. And even though the current sea surface temperatures in the Equatorial Pacific are the coldest they've been so far this year, we're still forecasting a weak La Nina for winter. Now, some regions in southern Brazil, think near Paraguay, over the next several days are really going to heat up. I saw some temperatures getting well over 100 degrees. But Brazil and northern Argentina, Paraguay, they're going to be blasted by a couple of decent cold fronts coming through at the end of next week. The northern growing regions are seeing the return of the monsoonal rain, and the southern growing regions are going to be getting a lot of precipitation as well. And what does all of that mean? basically means that this kind of up-down behavior in Brazil, this regular rainfall, they're going to get a decent start to their planting season because the soil moisture is coming back up. So again, seeing a good year for beans and corn out of Brazil this year.
Hey, thanks so much for taking the time with me today.
Yeah, thank you.
That, of course, is Eric Snodgrass. He's with Agrible from right here in Urbana-Champaign. I'm Todd Gleason.